show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, we have lots of stuff to cover. Fantastic show planned for you tonight. I am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, as always, is the windy Michael Engel. Windy because, as those of you who live in Kansas City know, lots of tornadoes around tonight. Thankfully, it's not windy today, so our internet connection should not be at risk.
Shouldn't be.
Over long-time listeners and know how long, how much we struggled fighting the wind.
It's sneaky stuff.
It is. You know, it's tough. You can't sleep on that wind for one second. But tonight we've got some big news with not anything special that most people probably don't know about already, but just with the Royals yesterday. We're recording this as of Tuesday, July 7th, and just yesterday and was it yesterday and the day before? Was it when did everything come out? I can't remember.
The All-Star starters were Sunday night.
That was Sunday, and then Monday was the reserves, right?
Monday was reserves and pitchers.
So, between the last 2 days, the results have come in, and the Royals, the Kansas City, it's still weird. I was listening on my way to work today, listening to Nate Buchady on Border Patrol. Thank you. I don't know. I kept wanting to say Border Showdown. I was like, that's not right. I don't know why I was blanking on that. Border Patrol, yes. Anyway, and he was saying that, you know, we should be past this by now. This will be the third consecutive winning season, you know, knock on wood, for the Royals. They won the World Series last year. They've had multiple All-Stars for the last few years. So we should kind of be past this, but it still seems insane to say, and I was completely in agreement, it's the Royals' four All-Star starters, Lorenzo Cain, Alex Gordon, Alcides Escobar, and Salvador Perez, and six total All-Stars as Wade Davis and Kelvin Herrera both made the team. And as I say that, I am reminded that it is no longer Kelvin Herrera at his own request. It is Kelvin Herrera. I sent a link to you, Mike, today. It was somebody made a tweet, just like a random thing on Twitter, because that's what Twitter is, lamenting Fiziak calling him Kelvin Herrera. People love to give Steve Fiziak shit, myself included. And this one particular person was ragging on him for calling him Kelvin instead of Kelvin, which was the proper pronunciation as far as this guy knew, as far as I knew. Sure. And Bob Swanson corrected him on Twitter. And it was actually retweeted by Buster Olney, of all people, but retweeted him and said that at Kelvin Herrera's request, he no longer wants to be called Kelvin, but Kelvin. I'm not sure why, if he wants it to be the more American one. I'm not sure why the reasoning for that would be, but
I don't know.
There it is.
Just from what he wants.
From the horse's mouth, if you will. So Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis made the reserve squad as relief pitchers, and of the additional, I heard something that confused me. Is there one person selected from the additional, or is there going to be two?
The final vote is one from each league.
One from each. Okay, so two total. That's what I was confused. Like, what? I thought there was only one. So okay, So the five. Five remaining players that could be voted in, one of whom is Mike Moustakas for the American League. So there could be a seventh Royals player. And judging by the way the Royals have taken to the internet voting, it's a very distinct possibility that Mike Moustakas could make this squad, which would put him at seventh. And the Royals already have eclipsed their franchise record for most All-Stars in 1 year. Can you believe that? All those great teams in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And this, the 2015 Kansas City Royals, have the most All-Stars in one season. Mike, how does that make you feel when you hear that?
It's pretty crazy, because you wouldn't think that this is the group that would do it. I mean, maybe in, like, if you told me in 2011, I could probably buy it, because at that point the farm system was so hyped and so big in regards to, like, you know, how many great prospects there were, and they got like nine guys in the Baseball America Top 100 and all that. And so, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I would kind of think that the guys you'd be putting in the All-Star game would be Mike Montgomery and John Lamb and,
I was about
and
to
things
say,
like that. But
I would have agreed with you, but the five people that, or the six people that you would have thought would have been completely different.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess Gordon, you could kind of see.
But still, in 2011, that was the year that he broke out.
It was
out.
The first when year that, he did anything, yeah.
When those rankings came out, Gordon was still kind of floundering.
Yeah, and that's true.
I was ready. I was ready to trade him while he still had any value left, and I was one of those people. So I'm glad I was wrong on that one. But to your point, I mean, that was you wouldn't even have thought Gordon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you think Hosmer, Moustakas, maybe Will Myers, maybe outside shot at Sal Perez or something. If you're talking 2011,
maybe. And Lorenzo Cain hadn't played in the major leagues at all. Alcides Escobar was like a .240 hitter. You know,
they didn't seem like, you know, all-star types of guys. It just was like, you know, hey, and, you know, to be fair, you know, it is somewhat because of voting. I think if there was just a pure ranking, these guys probably wouldn't have made it. But I mean, if you look at it, the guys elected Perez, this is his third All-Star game. He's got three gold gloves, or he's going to have three gold gloves. And Alex Gordon's going to get his fifth gold glove. And he's been on the top highlight on Baseball Tonight for 2 months. And, you know, he's a former minor league player of the year and also a three-time All-Star. And you get a guy like Kane, who's also in highlights all the time, having a great year, ALCS MVP, kind of lumped in with Sal Perez, has a great backstory that got a lot of national attention because it is a unique story. And then Escobar, who's just kind of a known name in a weak class. So it's not like these guys, a lot of the national attention is focused on almost, I mean, I guess it's not every national guy, but a lot of blogs and a lot of different columns are like basically portraying it as if these guys are absolutely not worth, you know, being on the All-Star team. And they're all guys who are, you know, top four or five at their position. So it's not outrageous for them to be in that discussion.
No.
And especially when a lot of the voting happened in April and early May and things like that, when some of the numbers look better. I mean, Eric Hosmer looked great in April and hasn't been good since. Didn't end up winning the vote, even though he led it for a couple of those periods. Moustakas was ahead for a long time, but Josh Donaldson is having an MVP kind of season. Moustakas' numbers are still good, but a lot of people are acting like it's absurd that he's even in the discussion when, you know, all of these guys have a case.
Absolutely.
And especially, you know, with some guys like Perez or Gordon and Kane, I think those three would have been in the All-Star game, starter or not. And
yeah.
Wade Davis would certainly warrant a spot. And I think Moustakas would have had a spot. So I think you still would have been able to see five guys, even without the voting going the way that it did. Maybe Moustakas wouldn't be the final guy or in the final vote, but maybe he makes it as a reserve if they don't have, you know, other guys voted in. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's outrageous to me, but I'm also a Royals fan who's seen, you know, pretty much every game and followed these guys for a long time. And I mean, I do have a bias, but, you know, if you, objectively, they're all in the top of their kind of spots. If you look at even wins above replacement, even if you just kind of look at it by name value, I mean, they're up there in that top third of guys at their position. And I think it's reasonable to have them in the game, starter or otherwise. So I don't get the outcry. I think it's, I don't know. I think it's motivated by some of the, you know, it's still just Kansas City.
Right.
How, you know, they got to be cheating somehow.
Right.
When really, I think it's just, you know, a huge fan, well, not huge, but a growing and excited fan base getting behind everything.
Yeah. And I'm just eternally fascinated by the way media narratives take shape and how they kind of just breathe this life of their own. And I've long held that with football in a 16-game season, your first four games basically decides if you're going to make the Pro Bowl or not. And then in baseball, similarly, your first 40 games basically decides if you're going to be an all-star, especially in baseball because it's in midseason.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, people look for these hot starts and these things, and then it just because it's new and it's fresh and it's a new season and oh my God, this is going to be it, and this and that just kind of propels the narrative for the rest of the season. And you know, that's not necessarily exactly what's happening here, just an example of one of the phenomenons I feel just anecdotally that I've noticed. But it is very interesting that, like what you said, I mean, all these people are definitely relevant to their positions in terms of all-star worthy. I'd be so curious to see what the difference would have been if it hadn't jumped out with all these Royals players having the huge lead. Say it jumped out and Salvador Perez was leading, and Alcides Escobar had like a small lead or something, and that was it. And then, you know, Moustakas was second or third place, and Hosmer was the same, and Kane and Gordon were in the top three or five, and just kind of in the mix like a normal player, and it wasn't this huge outcry, oh my God, type of thing. I mean, it's entirely reasonable that if Moustakas was in second or third place the whole time, you could have seen articles being like, you know, say Moustakas was in third place the entire race, right? And then didn't, you know, you could have conceivably seen articles of people being like, Mike Moustakas is the most underappreciated third baseman in the American leagues this year, you know, and he actually has a case for being better than Josh, you know, he doesn't really. But, you know, those are the types of articles because people try and pick out that interesting point and something to a take or an angle that nobody else is doing or seeing, you know, and it's just so you could easily see that type of a narrative develop. And it's actually, you know, from the way the voting just over time of how it occurred, it actually with Hosmer over Cabrera, it was actually somewhat reasonable because you could have made the argument that first month of the season that he was as good as Miguel Cabrera, maybe even better because he's so much better defensively.
Yeah.
And but then Hosmer started cooling down and even going into a slump.
And Cabrera and that's heated when
the
up.
Numbers started. Yeah, and Cabrera became the Miguel Cabrera that we know, and then he started, you know, the voting shifted. So that was reasonable, but people were still making this big deal about it. But it went kind of the way you would have thought. And, you know, I do think there was a lot of residual voting from the fans with, you know, if you're a National League team, say you're, I don't know, a Nationals fan or whatever, and you don't know much about the American League and you're looking over and you're, okay, I remember, you know, Lorenzo Cain was the ALCS MVP. I'll throw him a vote because, you know, after Mike Trout, who else is going to be there in the AL? You know, if you're not a huge follower of American League baseball, then that's what you're looking for. You're looking for names. As not a huge follower of National League baseball, that's kind of what I did. You know, like I try and do a decent amount of research and be as informed a voter as I can. But at the same time, I also appreciate
it's just
an the all-star
game vote.
Yes, and I voted for Nori Aoki. I'm going to throw it out there. That's what I did.
I did that every now and then.
So I did. I took my 35, and I sent it to Nori Aoki because let's get as many Royals-affiliated players as we possibly can into this game. But it's incredibly exciting. I mean, there's going to be four Royals introduced on national television as starters. I mean, the whole team gets introduced, obviously, but as starters, they'll be introduced. They'll be first on the field. They'll be making plays. They'll get two or three at-bats. And then it could be that Ned Yost is managing, by the way.
Right.
So
he may never take his guys off the field. I don't know.
I mean, it could be to the point where it's a close game and you're deciding basically the who gets home field advantage. Well, not basically, you are deciding who gets home field advantage for game seven. So you could be at a point where the Royals could bring in Wade Davis in the All-Star game and eventually have him decide to the point where they're bringing him in game seven at home of a World Series. You know, right. I mean, theoretically, that could be possible the way things have shaken out. Pretty crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, the fallout of all of this is, I think what you said about the way things started, because when the voting came out, I was pretty sure Sal Perez was going to be up there, and I thought Hosmer might be around, but I didn't think that at the time that they were going, the Royals would have five guys in the starting lineup right away in that first update. And I think once that happened, Royals fans paid attention, started spreading the word, and then you saw Morales step up and he overtook Nelson Cruz, and then it started, you saw Alex Rios was fourth in outfield voting, and it was like, okay, well, now let's, you know, bump this, you know, that guy up, and then Infante was another guy. And so then you got to that point where there were eight guys slated to start and Mike Trout. And that's when it reached kind of the peak of both Royals votes coming
critical
in.
Critical mass.
Yeah, it was just like, and it was like, all right. And that's when I think other fan bases started to jump in. And you saw like Miguel Cabrera got 4 million votes in one week, and Josh Donaldson got 4 million votes in a week, and this and that. And so I think that ended up getting a lot of other fan bases motivated, if nothing else. But I think in the end, what it worked out to be is pretty much the team it probably was most likely to end up being, with maybe, I don't know, maybe Escobar wouldn't have maybe made it. But really, there's no great shortstop this year, so why not Escobar? He's a guy who could, who, you know, he's in the highlights every week too. So
yeah, I mean,
why not?
He's not the greatest offensive player, but I mean, if you look back at some of the shortstops in the past, there have been ones that have, you know, or other infielders, there have been some that have made the All-Star game with similar offensive statistics, but they've been so good defensively to make up for it. And, you know, Alcides Escobar, is especially early in the season, it seemed like he was getting a lot of clutch hits in, you know, runners in scoring position and things like that. He's cooled off quite a bit lately, but, you know, to your original point that we started the show with, I mean, you can't have a discussion of best shortstops in the league without Alcides Escobar in American League or National League, to be honest. And, you know, his biggest attraction keeping him from being the best is his offensive deficiencies. But, I mean, he is by no stretch a out of place in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, he should be in the discussion. He's, if you look at Fangraphs wins above replacement, he's like 0.02 from being second. You know, he's fourth now. It's that kind of close level. I mean, you can pick out, yeah, Mike Trout is the best outfielder in the AL, or like Bryce Harper's the best outfielder in the NL. But, you know, finding the next guy isn't the easiest thing. So it's not like there's this wide gap between talent levels or performance levels or popularity levels. It's pretty close in all of these spots that, you know, I think it makes sense to have one of these guys in there if there's no vastly superior secondary guy. You know, Jose Iglesias never really seemed to pick up a lot of steam. I mean, Escobar was wire to wire, never really sweated out any kind of vote gap. You know, nobody really caught up to him, and really never worried about him, because there weren't great options to go above him until basically Carlos Correa started, and by then it was, you know, too late. So yeah, it's not like there's like a slam dunk guy to replace Escobar, even though his offensive numbers aren't great. Kane is third in the AL in WAR as an outfielder, so I mean that's legit. And a guy like Perez, you know, look at his popularity and look at, you know, what his reputation is in the game. He was either going to be voted in by the fans or voted in by the players. So that's an easy one too. So it's just like, I think the guys who got in were easy to get in. And then when you look at like the pitchers, Wade Davis, he's got a 0.24 ERA now. Well, of course he was going to get in.
I heard somebody on the way home on the radio, I can't remember who it was, say, if you're not going to have Wade Davis in the All-Star game, then why even have an All-Star game?
Pretty
that's
much.
That's how good his season has been as a reliever.
He's given up 11 extra base hits in the last year and a half. Just ridiculous. And no homers. None of those are homers. It's just crazy.
We've talked about it before, but that .24, that belongs to me. I'm going to wear that one because we were at the game, my wife and I, when that run was scored, and right before the run was scored, I turned to my wife and said, you know, he has the second longest scoreless inning streak in all of baseball.
And then
no more than 10 minutes later, it was all over. So that's on me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Wade. I'm sorry, but there you go.
That's too bad. And one earned run in 37 innings pitched.
Yep. I mean,
that's ridiculous.
We're not going to talk about it this show because this is going to be kind of an all-star show, but there is a legitimate discussion to be had later this season about Wade Davis's possible Cy Young candidacy. I don't know how legitimate it is, but it is legitimate. He'll get votes. I bet you he'll get
votes. He will get votes. He was like ninth last year. He'll get votes for sure.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And that's as a middle reliever. I mean, it's not uncommon to see guys get up there, but they're guys who have saves. And Davis doing this as an eighth inning setup guy, that's kind of remarkable. But that's how good he's been. So it's exactly like you said. If he's not in the All-Star game, then what the heck are we doing? Because he's certainly... at least among relief pitchers, you know, easily at the top, or if he's not, he's right there. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think Betances would be the best guy to give an argument for him, and that's about it. Yeah. I mean, that's really it. Now, Herrera, I can kind of see some of the thing about that, and Herrera was one of Yost's decisions. That was one of his picks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his numbers are good. And they're good for Herrera, and they're good for the Royals bullpen. They're just not good compared to, you know, what some of the other guys might be. But it's Ned Yost. I mean, he's going to pick his guy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, yeah.
The quote that I think it was Josh Vernier put it out there, or maybe it was Jeffrey Flanagan or something. I don't know. He was like, yeah, the numbers are really similar, but none of those guys pitched in Game 7 of the World Series. It's like... Yep, that sounds about Ned Yost. That's what it comes down to, and that's his prerogative to do that. If that's who he wants in the game, that's who he wants in the game. And so, I mean, he's going to be in there. His numbers may not warrant it, and people are kind of getting cranky because I think Corey Kluber got snubbed. But Kluber's going to have a chance if there's a guy who started on Sunday who got named to the team but won't be playing because he won't be available. So, I mean, it's not like... You know, there are going to be replacements for injuries. There are going to be replacements for different circumstances. Guys might bow out because of some nagging injury or whatever. Miguel Cabrera is already on the DL, so he's not going to be able to start because of that. So it's like it's not quite to the level of like the Pro Bowl where you get like seven quarterbacks named to each side.
Yeah.
But it's. It's still that you know that once even they have that roster, until they're on the field, it's not really set. So all of the snub talk, it seems heightened this year, but I don't think it's much different than any other year.
Yeah, I think it's just awareness because just the Royals taking over the voting made for such a national story.
Yeah.
So there's so much more awareness onto how important the distribution of players is. So... Normally, if you're, you know, last year when John Farrell was managing for the AL, and he, you know, if he would have, I don't even know who would have been a pick for him, similar to Kelvin Herrera, but you know, say you know he made a pick of a Red Sox player that was the same level
mm-hmm.
of Kelvin Herrera,
good, then, but maybe not.
Yeah, you know,
great
maybe,
compared to the other options.
Yeah, then nobody would have really said anything. They'd just be like, "Oh, well, it's his guy. He's gonna pick his guy." You know, that's part of the perks. Hey, you won the American League
right.
last year. You're the managing the All Star game. You can sneak another one of your guys in. That's kind of borderline.
Right.
So that's how it goes. That would have been the reaction last year, but this year because of the heightened awareness of all of it, there's probably a little bit more to do. A little bit more of a to-do about Kelvin Herrera, but you know, he's I mean, he's got a 2.14 ERA or something, and it's, you know, he's, I mean, I think he's deserving. But I mean, when you look at some of the big spots, he pitches in some really, really high leverage situations.
Mm-hmm. And even though he's just a seventh inning guy, I mean, he still does it. It's still, you know, he's called upon to get some of those outs, and he's also usually the first guy out if you know, that starter starts the seventh, puts on a guy. He's the guy they usually go to.
Yeah.
So that's where he's pitching. He's I haven't looked at their leverage index or anything, but he probably pitches in higher leverage situations than either of Davis or Holland. Or
Davis usually gets a clean sheet when he comes out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty rare for him to come out with anybody on. Davis maybe will. Herrera is pretty common, it feels like.
Yeah.
That's without looking at the numbers. That's just going off of what it feels like, which is dangerous, but I it feels right. So
yeah, but there's also that's what we do on this show. We roll.
That's right.
And there's also the fact that, you know, for a good half of the season or so, maybe not half, but you know, 40% of what's completed of this season, there was no Greg Holland as closer. So
right.
Herrera was an eighth inning guy. Yep. So, you know, more than his narrative would suggest this season, he's been in those higher leverage eighth inning situations. And that gives a little bit more credence to Wade Davis as well, because he had all those saves. I mean, I'm not sure, I did have like 9 saves or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, nine of them.
So, I mean, you know, that's something there, you know, but
and in the end, it's Ned Yost gets to make that call. And really, Yost only took one of his guys. I mean, there were 4 voted in. Davis was a player vote, and Herrera was Ned Yost's pick. And I, you know, I don't think that's crazy. It's not like he went and picked 3 Royals as his picks.
No, you know, he didn't just he could have gone right down the line. Herrera, Hosmer,
right.
Moose, you know, he could have just,
and that's what he did with like I mean, his coaching staff. He's taken the entire coaching staff with him.
Yeah,
plus Lloyd McClendon and AJ Hinch. Those are the other guys. But otherwise, it's going to be all Royals. So, I mean, it's all, you know, Rusty, Mike Gerschle, Dave Island, all those guys, even Doug Henry in the bullpen, they're all going with him. So, and I don't know if that's normal or not. I feel like it probably is every so often.
Yeah,
even it's the norm, but it also seems like usually you've got at least 1 or 2 more managers involved.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes they kind of, managers kind of look out for their own. I think was it last year or the year before Yost was part of the squad?
Something like that. I want to say last year or the year before, but I know he's been on there. It's kind of a ceremonial kind of thing,
if you will. Yeah, it's right. Almost like they kind of either, you know, you have like an AJ Hinch who's kind of an up and coming manager type, or you have kind of the old guard of your Ned Yosts that are like, hey, you know, this guy's been around. He's, everyone likes him. Let's throw him a bone here, if you will. So, you know, there's not, I don't know how much that all matters, but I feel like just in anecdotally, of course, that seems to be kind of the way it goes.
Yeah. I'm not even sure what like those coaches do, like the managers who act as coaches, but they, I mean, what do you do? I know, in the past. I've seen them like coaching a base, but it's like, it's an exhibition game. It's like, what?
Yeah,
you're not going to call a bunt usually in that spot.
No, and you're not going to be, you know, you don't hear many people saying, you know, oh, well, such and such coach from this team really had an impact on me during the All-Star game, and it kind of
right.
helped me do even better in the second half. You know, you don't that kind of thing doesn't happen. So it's mostly a ceremonial.
Yeah, thing. All of this is all an exhibition. So
yes,
it should count for anything, but that it does, I think, kind of gets some people up in arms. I don't even like, still doesn't even bother me, even if it does count. Like if Escobar had gotten voted out or replaced, it wouldn't have bothered me that much. I think it's cool that he's in, but yeah, whatever. You know, I mean, I'm going to watch the game anyway. I always do every year. Doesn't yeah. matter, you know, what's going on with it. I'm going to watch it because it's baseball. And it's the only baseball on at that point. And so I'm going to go for it.
And people talk about, you know, seriousness of baseball and how serious things things have gotten for sports and all that kind of stuff. And there is an element of it that should just be fun. And regardless of how you feel, the players really do seem like they have fun during the All-Star game, especially during like the home run derby.
Yeah, they're just goofing off. And so
So that's kind of cool to see. It's kind of cool to see them be a little bit normal, a little bit more human, just kind of hanging out with each other and having a good time. And that's fun. And it'll be fun to see the Royals get to be a part of that. So many Royals get to be a part of that. And you know, I think that's where like Salvador Perez and players like that, that kind of have that boisterous personality that's how you get reelected to the All-Star.
Oh, yeah.
Even in years when, you know, like Derek Jeter had years where he didn't deserve it, but he was still getting back because he was the name Derek Jeter and he'd been to so many All-Star games and the players liked and respected him and the coaches liked and respected him. And that trickles down to the fans and they see mm-hmm. that. And that's what Sal Perez is going to become. He's already there.
Oh, yeah. He's that guy now.
I mean, he's that guy that everyone in America knows who Sal Perez is, who's a baseball fan, I should say. If you're a baseball fan, you know who Sal Perez is. You respect his skills. You know that he's good. And that's what's going to happen. He's got basically a free pass the next 4 or 5 years because that's how the All-Star game, unless they change it, the MLB does, which now that things kind of went back down to earth a little bit, I don't know that they will change it.
I don't think that they will. I mean, they got record voting numbers there.
Yeah, and
they're not going to change that.
Every one of those votes is, well, not every one, I guess, technically, but that's a lot of views on the MLB website that they love. So, but yeah, that's Sal Perez is pretty much the next few years he's going to be in the game would be my guess. I'd say the next 3 to 5 years pretty much just on reputation.
Gotta be. I mean, guys like Stephen Vogt's had a really good year, but you know, it's Perez. People know him. People follow his Instagram. He goes viral. I mean, I think he's great for the game because he's just excitable. I mean, just like he's fun to watch. He's easy to cheer for.
He plays with passion. He plays with abandon. Like it's what, you know, it's that kind of when you played baseball in the backyard or in the middle of the street when you were a kid or whatever, he's that guy, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, so and he has the numbers too. I mean, he's, you know.
Yeah, he can back it up.
He's got a bunch of homers, and he's hitting all right. His on-base is not good, but that's just because he doesn't walk. And that's really the main thing that, like, brings his wins above replacement below those guys because the batting average and slugging are pretty equal. Mm-hmm. But it's just that the on-base is not. So it's like, you know, everything else pretty much equal except for the walks, which still counts, but it's not like it's a huge gap just because he's at 1.4 and this guy's at 1.6. It's just like, okay, if he walked a little bit more, they'd be even.
Yeah, definitely. but I guess that brings us to the last two that we haven't talked about a ton between Alex Gordon and Lorenzo Cain. And I don't know what else there really is to say. I mean, you mentioned it. Lorenzo Cain is second, right, in the AL in WAR?
He's
for outfielders. Third. But he's just, did you say he's 2 points away from being second or something?
I don't know how. I didn't even look that close. I just picked him out and was like, he's third. There he is.
Yeah, so there you go. He's third.
I mean, he's third. He's having a really good year. He's hit really well the last 2 weeks. Leads the team in stolen bases. He's best defensive center fielder in baseball. I mean, what else can you say about him? The guy's just crazy.
It just seems like whenever this season the Royals have needed a big play, offensively or defensively, Lorenzo Cain has come through.
Yeah.
And he always seems to come up with big plays when the Royals really, really need it, whether it's a big time catch to stop a rally or to end an inning or you know, an outfield assist to try and hold somebody to base or throw somebody out, or whether it's a clutch hit or a home run. I mean, he's been doing it all year.
Yeah, this weekend, I mean, that's a good example. He ended up scoring the walk-off run both times against who they play, Minnesota.
Yep.
You know, he got a walk on Sunday and ended up scoring the winning run on Friday. So, I mean, that's what he's done. And he gets on base. He's walking all right. He's got some power. And that defense, you know, what you can't do anything against that defense. And then Alex Gordon is already been on two All-Star teams, should have been on the All-Star team in 2011. He's got all the gold gloves. He's well-known at this point. And
yes, well-respected again.
Right. So, I mean, he was going to get in the game, elected or not. And the players, I'm sure, would have put him in because he's just that guy. And another big fan favorite, another guy who's, you know, really good for the game. He does a lot of stuff in the community. He's personable, but he's not like, he's not boisterous like Sal, but he still kind of gets out there a little bit. He's just not goofy, you know?
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that a lot of people like that kind of player too. It's, you know, you don't have to be all
the very, you know, been there, act like you've been here before, businessy type of guy.
Yeah.
That still, obviously, you can see the enjoyment of the game, and that he plays, he doesn't treat it like a business necessarily, but has a business like attitude about it. That, you know, I think the older generation, the generation kind of older than us, Mike, that yeah, really, really enjoys seeing that, you know. And, you know,
the guys who hate Bryce Harper.
Yes, the guys who hate Bryce Harper and Yasiel Puig love Alex Gordon. That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. And they should. I mean, everybody should.
I don't know how you can not like Alex Gordon. The forearms alone. I mean, let's be honest. Our friend, of the show, Kevin Scobie, if he was here, he's probably agreeing through the speakers right now. If you're listening,
he just sensed it.
Yes.
He just knows if anybody's talking about Alex Gordon's forearms, he just knows.
Yes. If you happen to listen to the show, Kevin, send us a tweet when you hear this section, just because it'll be funny. But so yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And besides the fact that it's going to be six, possibly seven Royals in the All-Star game, another reason that it's going to be super ultra top fun is because Mike and I, the Kansas City Baseball Vault, the collective Kansas City Baseball Vault, will be hosting with Kelly's Bar, Kelly's Westport Inn, we'll be hosting an All-Star Game watch party at, of course, Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll be on the main floor in the back area. Kelly's has been incredibly gracious enough to give us the entire back area. We're actually going to pipe the sound through the speakers in the back. So we're going to watch the game. We're going to have a show, record it live. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some Kelly's gift certificates to give away. We're going to have some cool shirts that great friend of the show, Brandon, PSA Prez on Twitter. He is graciously offered to make us some shirts, and they'll be there, and we'll have some giveaways. Mike's got some books to give away. Some Royals associate Frank White's book and Willie Akins. Is that right?
Yep.
Both those. So we're gonna have some stuff to give away. It's gonna be fun. Tuesday night, obviously, the date of the All-Star game. We're gonna have a great time. There's gonna be tons of Royals there. There's gonna be tons of Royals fans, tons of Royals there at the game, obviously, and then tons of Royals fans at Kelly's. So yeah, you guys should you absolutely make it all out. July 14th, date of the All-Star game, Tuesday night. We're going to be there setting up shop starting at about probably as soon as we get off work, probably in the 5:30 to 6 range. The fake Ned, Chris Kamler, is going to be there. He'll be on board with us for a little bit.
I don't know if that's a draw or a deterrent, but
if that's going to keep you away, pretend I did not say that. You can be surprised
right when
you get there. So yeah, everyone, listener, we've had some great meetups and some really fun times out at Kelly's Westport Inn. With the show and with just meeting up with everybody and hanging out and having a great time. So coming out, there's a Facebook group on it that has all the details and such. So if you,
that'll be linked, and I'm throwing it out pretty much every day on my Twitter and it's on the Kansas City Baseball Vault. So just go to facebook.com/KC Baseball Vault, should find it there too.
Yeah. So that's going to be a great time. You should all come out. If you guys have any questions at all about any of that, hit us up on Twitter, of course. Mike, at Michael Engel on Twitter, and me, I am at The Jeff Report. So hit us up if you want to, just anything Royals related, of course, but especially if you have any questions about the event, timing, parking, you're not familiar with the area, need anything help. I live incredibly close by. I could walk to Kelly's, so just I'm really familiar with the area. Anything like that, just let me know and talk to either Mike or myself, and we'll help you out, because we'd love to see each and every one of you out there rooting on the most ever Royals in an All-Star game. And hopefully we can get the most ever Royals fans in Kelly's. Probably not, because that All-Star, the playoff clinching
game. Playoff clincher and the playoffs themselves were, it was pretty packed.
So maybe the best right after Neath, those dates. That's what we can shoot for.
That's what we'll go for.
So yeah, that'll wrap up the show right now. I think this weekend, where once the Royals have eclipsed the midway point, and Mike and I are gonna have another kind of shorter show. We're gonna detail some of our thoughts on the first half, and then some predictions for the second half moving forward, as well as some of the some reviews of some of the bold predictions that we made. And I can already know of one that's gonna be way off for me, because I believe I was riding that Kyle Zimmer train again. And picked him to pitch 25 innings, I believe, at least.
It's going to be a lot of innings in September.
He's going to have to be used quite a bit. If he gets three starts in September and he goes 8 innings each time, I'm right there, man. I'm right there. So that's an incredibly reasonable expectation, is it not?
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll review many of those, and we'll have many more opportunities to make fun of my incredibly bold predictions. But who knows? I may or may not be right. You'll have to tune in.
You might back into
about
that
a
one.
Couple. I might back into
probably not.
I might back into a couple. You never know. But with that, we'll end this show, our special All-Star edition. Again, that's July 14th for the All-Star game. Come out to Kelly's Westport Inn. Mike and I are going to be there. A lot of other Royals fans are going to be there. We're going to have some giveaways, going to have some gift certificates. You might get a free book, free shirt. You might get a free drink. Who knows? You got to show up to find out. So please be out there. We always love to meet the fans, meet the Royals fans. We might even pull you on and then have you talk for a little bit. It's been known to have, what was that guy's name?
Zach.
Yes. Yes. You knew exactly what I was talking about.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh man. The guy who was a Royals fan. Couldn't inside forget. Of his mother's womb.
He was a walking no regrets tattoo.
Man, that was...
Missed that guy. I wonder what he's doing now.
Hey, Zach, if you're listening, come on out to Kelly's. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you out there.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
All right. So with that, I think we'll end the show. Again, be on the lookout for another show in the next few days, at weekend time frame. And then please, we'll remind you many times until then, but come on out to Kelly's. It'll be a great time. We'd love to see y'all out there. So for Michael Engel, I am Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thank you all for listening. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.